Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Tuesday, July 2nd, 2019. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi there.
Charlotte and I like each other very much right now. We may not later when World Cup soccer is over. We'll have to see how that goes.
That's true. This may be my last appearance ever on TDO. It could happen.
Also with me today, I have John Marlero. Hi, John.
Go U.S. Women's Soccer. Yay.
Well, we call it soccer and then men's soccer.
Football.
Yeah. We have soccer and men's soccer now. I think the women's soccer team has pretty much proven that. So, yeah, here we are. I actually didn't mean to talk about soccer. Our first topic today, most likely our only topic today, is Johnny Ive and Tim Cook and the Wall Street Journal and what everybody involved has to say about everybody else involved. Right, Charlotte?
Yes. Apparently, Johnny Ive is leaving Apple. Did you know about this?
I had not heard.
Yeah, apparently that's what's happening. No. So, obviously, since Johnny Ive announced end of last week that he is on his way out from Apple and he's going to form his own independent design company, one of whose major clients will be Apple.
Shocker.
Right. There has been a lot of talk about why this has happened, but a lot of the theme of those pieces and the discussion has been Johnny Ive has been on his way out the door for a long time.
Right. Like people paying close attention, which is something that we talked about. People who were paying close attention to this weren't necessarily surprised.
Correct. But the Wall Street Journal in a very long, quite in-depth feature point said that things might be go a little bit deeper than that, and actually there'd been a bit of a rift between Johnny Ive and his colleagues on the top Apple leadership team. Didn't like the way that Tim Cook had made the company very operations focused and that his closest confidants were from the operations side and all that kind of thing. Now, okay, you might think that's fairly standard business reporting. What is not standard is that Tim Cook really hit back. He gave a very, very, very strong statement to Dylan Byers at NBC and MSNBC. It's worth just me reading out a little bit of it just to understand quite how strong Cook's comments are. The story is absurd, he said. A lot of the reporting and certainly the conclusions just don't match with reality. At a base level, it shows a lack of understanding about how the design team works and how Apple works. It distorts relationships. There is, you can read the whole statement in the story I've written up on TMO, and it goes on a bit more talking about how phenomenally talented the design team is and so on. Mm-hmm. The point is, one, Tim Cook doesn't normally say anything responding to these stories.
Right.
Two, when he does, he doesn't normally use language like that, which for Tim Cook is very, very strong indeed. So I was a bit, it was last night for me, kind of yesterday afternoon for you guys, and we were all pretty taken aback when we saw the statement.
Well, first of all, because the last time I remember Apple talking about a news story was the Bloomberg chips and servers from China thing, number one.
Right.
And that was
exactly
Apple, not Tim Cook. Coming out
Correct.
And saying that it was Apple released a statement including comments from Tim Cook, but it wasn't Tim himself. In this case, Tim sent an email to Dylan Byers and said, here's what's up. None of this is right, which is surprising.
It was very surprising. And like you say, there's that example. And the only other example I can think of was when they really put a very strong statement out against Spotify.
Yeah.
But basically, apart from that, Apple tends to kind of do quiet PR. That's how it works. Anyone who's ever reported Apple will tell you how hard it is to get hold of someone at Apple PR.
Right. And then when you do, they will talk to you, but they may not say anything.
Sometimes that has been known to happen. But so I went, having seen this and writing out the story, I also went to the Wall Street Journal via Dow Jones, which is its parent company. And Colin Schwartz, who is the Senior Vice President of Communications there, you might want to sit down. This is a long statement I got from her.
Okay, everybody
she
get a pen.
Replied, we stand by our reporting. No,
there it is. That's the whole thing. Yep.
So they are. So what's interesting here is that the Wall Street Journal is not backing down either. Like, and they're going into bat. So Tim Cook is going into bat against one of the biggest business publications in the world. Mm-hmm. And Dow Jones and the Wall Street Journal are going into bat against one of the biggest companies in the world. Mm-hmm. And nobody's backing down. And that, to me, very interesting.
They're both right, Cheryl. I think they're both right because they're both looking at things from a different perspective. My take is that Tim Cook is very respectful of Johnny Ive and want to protect his legacy and make sure that they have a continuing good relationship. Mm-hmm. But I think in the past there probably was some pressure on Johnny Ive to do things a little different than he had been. And I think it showed in the design of the Mac Pro, which has got lots of slots and power supplies and modularity and cheese gratery. And it's a completely different design probably than Johnny Ive would have designed. He had his shot with the 2013 Mac Pro, and that didn't work. So I think Tim Cook is in a good leadership mode. You keep your family business under, you know, behind closed doors. If you have any disagreements, you work it out internally, but you put a good public face on it. That's good leadership.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, first of all, this was late Monday afternoon when the article initially talking about all of this was on Friday. And
Sunday, wasn't it?
Well, we talked about it. Yeah, we talked about it last Friday.
No, that was another. There's been other reports on this, but this Wall Street Journal one is dated Sunday, I believe. I'll just check that, but I'm pretty sure it was a Sunday night, Monday morning article.
Okay, because we had talked on Friday about Johnny Ive leaving, and
because Bloomberg did a similar piece, which didn't rankle. No, the article is dated June 30th.
Okay, so the bulk of what I remember having read about this, because everybody had a take, was basically not that there was any sort of acrimonious relationship there, but just that kind of Johnny's heart wasn't in it anymore and he was going to do something else but still work with Apple. He was just going to do other things too. Okay, like I never got anything about there being any sort of contention in that relationship. I mean, if you've had a relationship with anybody for any period of time, of course there's going to be disagreements, but never anything dramatic. I mean, knowing how the world loves a headline about Apple, especially if it's something slagging them off, then, if there had been anything reportable, then it would have been reported because somebody would have immediately gone to some sort of source and told us all about it. And we never really got any of that. So it never struck me as anything particularly, like I said, acrimonious or terrible or anything like that. It was just sort of like people who were paying attention to what Johnny Ive was actually up to knew that he hadn't been there in a while and that, this isn't really surprising if you're paying closer attention to what the design team there is doing.
Wasn't there an article about 2 years ago about Johnny Ive spending a lot of time in London, traveling back and forth and not spending a lot of time on campus? And he was
correct. He apparently doesn't head to Apple HQ very much at all. He's spends a lot of time in San Francisco. Indeed, the story that the Wall Street Journal story starts by recalling a meeting 50 miles from Cupertino, where designers waited in San Francisco, where Johnny Ive left a designers waiting for about 3 hours and didn't really give them any conclusions during the meeting and kind of left everyone a bit frustrated. Mm-hmm. So I think John's point is a fair one, that probably there's a bit of truth in what everyone is saying, and that there were probably some people at Apple who were frustrated with Johnny Ive, and Johnny Ive was probably frustrated with some people at Apple. At some of those people spoke to the Wall Street Journal.
And it's Tim Cook's job to make Apple look good and preserve the legacy.
Tim Cook is trying to play nice.
Yep.
So I think that is true. And we discussed, didn't we, with Dave Kelly. And I suspect John might actually agree with me on this. we were saying that we thought a lot of what was going on in the way this news was rolled out was about Apple making sure nobody freaked.
Yes.
Yeah, because that's gone well.
Well, initially it did when we talked about it on Friday. That was the general consensus. Yeah.
Yeah. It was all designed to make sure nobody freaked, particularly investors and the markets. Mm-hmm. And that's
which is why it came out so late in the afternoon on Thursday for us to talk about on Friday. Yeah.
Yeah. Charlotte, you and I were thinking we were going to be disagreeing before the show, but I think we agree on everything.
Well, yes. So the bit I disagree with you on, that this is a story about the Johnny Ive and Tim Cook's relationship, which I think is the way you're portraying. What I think it is actually a very interesting example of how Apple deals with the media and public relations.
This version of Apple.
When we were talking before the show that Tim Cook and Johnny Ive had a falling out.
No.
I just meant to imply that there might have been some subtle engineering nudges on him to go a certain direction for the sake of engineering.
Did you explain that?
Pardon me?
How do you mean it?
Well, I think it came to a head during the Mac Pro where... And it came to a head during the design of the MacBook Pro, where things got out of control. The focus on being very, very thin put engineering pressure on the keyboard, and they had to jump through hoops to make a thin keyboard, and that created all sorts of problems. And if they,
I don't think it put pressure on the keyboard, because if you put any pressure on that keyboard, it's going to fail.
Pressure on the keyboard design, yeah. And I think if the MacBook Pro had been 2 millimeters thicker, and they had more design freedom for the keyboard, we wouldn't have a MacBook Pro for $3,000 with bad keyboards.
We wouldn't have a keyboard repair program for anybody.
Yeah, I mean, Apple's been shipping MacBook Pros for a long, long time, and the keyboards were always pretty good. Mm-hmm. So I think there was not necessarily a direct confrontation with Tim Cook, but I think there might have been some executive pressure, maybe from Dan Riccio or some others, to push back against some design decisions, and maybe that irritated Johnny Ive a little bit. That's all I'm saying. I don't think there was a direct falling out between Cook.
No, but I kind of think that's not the issue at hand here. I think that conversation has kind of played out, and the why it's happened is why we're seeing Johnny Ive leave. If Johnny Ive would. Do we believe if Steve Jobs was the CEO today of Apple, Johnny Ive would be leaving? I personally don't. So there's obviously something there, but that I don't think is the issue for today. I think the issue for today is how determined and how strong Apple is to say, no, not a problem, look over there. This reporting is outrageous. It's not right. Tim Cook said, I don't recognize the company, I think he said in his statement. That's really strong stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's part of Tim Cook's feeling about the legacy of Steve Jobs and how everything about Apple, the design of Apple Park, the designs of Johnny Ive, the heritage of quality and excellence and making the best are instilled in Tim Cook's mind. And when anybody tries to break down the legacy or the motivation of Apple and memory and a homage to the company that Steve Jobs built and Wozniak, that he needs to push back against that in his own mind because of the way he's structured his perception of Apple. I think it's perfectly reasonable to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I think, Charlotte, I wanted to, I feel slightly differently than you do about Johnny Ive leaving if Steve Jobs was still there. And it's because I think Johnny would make a clean break. I think he might have stayed longer in his sort of phantom role there and then just left. I don't think he would have been able to come to an agreement, an understanding, whatever, where he gets to build his own design firm and still work for Apple, because that's sort of having it both ways. Like, I'm not at Apple anymore, but I'm still doing all this work for Apple. And I don't know that Steve would have been okay with that, just given the kind of stuff that we hear about him and his management style and everything.
You can definitely imagine Jonny Ive going to Steve Jobs one morning saying, I'm thinking of leaving, and Jobs throwing a full-blown Steve Jobs tantrum, can't you?
Well, throwing a box at him. Here, you have till lunch. GTFO. Well, yeah, I could totally see that.
Remember, most of Steve Jobs, I don't know if it was most, but a significant part of Steve Jobs' career, Apple was a one-product company, a Macintosh and an iPod. Yes. Now Apple's so diverse and has so many products, so many irons in the fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jonny must feel like his expertise is demanded in so many areas that it's too much pressure on him, and he'd like to live a different kind of life.
And now somebody else can swoop in and be the person that makes an amazing watch or an amazing iPhone or an amazing other thing that Jonny doesn't want to work
on. AirPods or
you can never make amazing AirPods. Behave yourself.
I don't know. I'm still kind of loving mine, for the record. Like, I'm pretty happy with them. The single AirPod is magical. We'll talk about it another time. But, I think John, you might be right. Like, maybe it's just that Johnny's jam is designing computers. You know, the iMac was him.
Oh, yeah. He was really involved in the watch. That was a thing for him.
Yeah. And the new company is going to be focused on wearables and health tech, so I don't think that's right.
There was a book, I forget who wrote it, maybe it was Stephen Levy, about the life and times of Jonny Ive.
With Leander Carney, who wrote the Tim Cook book, right, biography of Jonny Ive.
Yeah. Who was it?
It was Leander Carney, who wrote the Tim Cook biography, who's also written a biography of Jonny Ive.
Yeah,
I think it was that book where they talked about when Jonny Ive was living in the UK, he was really into watches and had a rich selection of watches, and he was after watches that met his personal aesthetics, and that carried over years later when he went to design the Apple Watch.
Then maybe it's just that he's over computer designing now, and would rather do more mobile stuff, whether it's iPhones or watches or whatever, and wants to move to the next thing, whatever the next thing may be. Like, you know,
I think there may be something in that.
Yeah.
Before we cut, I know you're going to want to wrap up shortly, Kelly, but I also think it's worth pointing out. So Ben Mullen, who's a media reporter at the Wall Street Journal, when Dylan Byers put out his story, he tweeted, and the email from Tim Cook, he tweeted in response to the Cook statement, what reporting, what conclusions? He, Tim Cook, doesn't cite any specifics or mention any correctable errors, which is an interesting point. So, for example, with the Spotify example we mentioned earlier, the Apple statement was very meticulous in how it went after Spotify, wasn't it? If you remember, it talks about the different levels of the Apple tax that it takes. All the different things that Spotify done. It was very, very specific, wasn't it? And I think the Bloomberg example you mentioned earlier, it was also very specific, wasn't it? Whereas this, it is a slightly more general statement. That is a fair point. He doesn't pick out exact quotes. Now, Tim Cook would probably argue that's because it's all so convoluted and incorrect that it doesn't merit specific examples. I'm just dismissing the whole thing. But it is worth noting that they didn't go after the specifics.
I agree with you, Charlotte. Tim Cook is making his argument from based on authority rather than facts.
Correct, exactly. So I just think that's an interesting other element to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's specifically about it. Like, that's why, earlier I was talking about the characterization, because the characterization I got was never anything like that. And so, you know, that's sort of what he's talking about, is the characterization in this story, not you said this and it's not true or anything like that. So
exactly.
Yeah. So interesting. What I'm wondering now is how this shakes out, regardless of, you know, who ends up being right or wrong or retracting a statement or making a new statement or whatever, like what the next thing is in this, because the last time this happened, with the Bloomberg stuff was nothing. Like Apple said, that's not true. And Bloomberg said, well, yeah, it is. And that was it. We never really got any sort of resolution. So I'm wondering where this is going to end up going.
Well, Tim Cook came to Johnny's defense in a way, saying that, you know, we don't treat our employees that way and we have good working relationships and nobody understands better than we do the decisions and the events and the working relationships. And so this paves the way, not only, as Charlotte said, for good relationships with Wall Street, but also making sure that the future relationship, as Johnny contracts back to Apple, is a friendly relationship and that things get off on a good foot.
I guess we'll see what happens. Where this goes next is going to be really interesting, I think. So we will have to see. And when it does, I will absolutely have John and Charlotte back to talk about it. Stay tuned. I will give you a small housekeeping note now that we are doing a show tomorrow for the 3rd. We will be off the 4th and 5th. So that Wednesday show, it's going to be action-packed. We know it has to be a really great show to hold you through the extended holiday weekend. So we will be doing that. But in the meantime, I want to thank both of you for being here. Thank you, Charlotte, so much for coming by. And now each of us has to go emotionally prepare for World Cup soccer.
Come on, England.
USA, USA. John, thanks so much for coming by.
Yeah, and I want to put in a good word here. I'm in awe of Charlotte's expertise in handling and writing this article. Yay, Charlotte.
The love. Feeling it.
I'm going to have a little moment now.
All right. So we'll leave Charlotte with her moment. I want to thank all of you for joining us. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.